Welcome to episode 60.
Whoa.
That's a 6 followed by a 0.
Whoa.
Of the Breakdown of Walls podcast. Yeah, we made it. We made it to 60 episodes.
That's pretty crazy.
It's like, we're more than halfway to 100. And it's like, dude, it's awesome.
Indeed.
What episode 100? 100? No, like, by the time we get to 100, what will we be talking about? You know, it makes you think.
Yeah, really.
PS5, Xbox Series X will both be out by then.
Yep.
Be a slew of next-gen games to play. I don't know. Who knows? It could be something else. Could be awesome. But anyway, for now, returning back to the present, this episode 60 of the Breakdown Walls podcast, I'm Brandon Cole, and he is Sturlock. And today... Well, today's one of those episodes where...
I'm not playing 13 Sentinels as much as I'd like to be.
I'm shocked. I'm shocked at that. Shocked and surprised. But today is one of those episodes where we have both good and bad news. things to discuss that are both positive and negative. So,
indeed.
Yeah. So we'll see how it goes. But other than that, it's going to be a normal episode. You know how it is. You know how it is.
Yeah.
Accessibility or gaming news, accessibility news, and then that's basically the show. So let's get right to it, shall we, Sir Lockapron?
Gaming.
I that was not a proper segue. Hang on. Let's get right into it with some
gaming news.
Welcome to
Gaming News.
News. All right. Okay. So the first piece of gaming news we have today is just insane. I don't know if you looked at the outline, Sherlock, but holy cow.
I did. Whoa.
Yeah. It's... Wow.
That data.
So, ladies and gentlemen.
That data, though.
PS5 ain't playing. Okay? They ain't playing. There is a couple of technologies that PS5 is utilizing for compression of data on the SSDs. One of them is called Oodle Kraken. It's I guess Oodle is the company name, and it's just one of their technologies. It's called Kraken, and that's for general data compression. But it has now been released. They're also going to begin utilizing another of Oodle's compression technologies called Oodle Texture. Now, this I guess is very specifically for compression of like graphical data, like textures and such. And here's the thing, guys. Here's the thing. PS5 already has the faster SSD, putting out without compression, 5.5 gigabytes of bandwidth per second. Yep. Already the fastest one. Already.
They don't
need to do this. And yet. So, with the Oodle Kraken technology, this actually was mentioned by Mark Cerny in the big breakdown of the SSD and everything that he did. That's going to increase the bandwidth to about 8 or 9 gigs a second. I think it's like 7 to 9 gigs a second.
Wow.
Once that is combined with Oodle Texture, and it has been said that in the first wave of PS5 games, that probably won't be there, or at least very few games will support it, but it's going to be over time. They want to integrate it into every game they can over time. But basically, with Oodle Texture then added into that, the peak bandwidth for the PS5 SSD with, compressed with these compression technologies is going to be 17.38 gigabytes per second.
That's just, what the hell?
That's insane. There are games that are smaller than the PS5's ability to process in 1 second.
13 Sentinels.
13 Sentinels is smaller.
4 gigs, that game.
You could take 4 copies of 13 Sentinels and process them all in a single second.
That's insane. Now, that really helps to put it into perspective how friggin' powerful these drives are.
Yeah, yeah, it really does. It really does. And obviously, you know, that's the fact that you could do that is not really a measure of the drive, because, like, it's funny to say things like that, but the actual truth is, you know, obviously assets for many games are going to be much larger than they are for 13 Sentinels.
Right.
So they will still require a lot of data to process, but I mean, my God. And by the way, I did find out something that I didn't know before that I was always curious about, because I wanted to do this comparison, and I don't remember having heard this before, but I finally found it out. So you may be asking yourself, just for curiosity's sake, because I was asking myself, okay, what is the bandwidth of the current hard drives on PS4? So you can do a comparison.
Yeah, yeah.
I know the answer to that now. On PS4,
they're mechanical drives, aren't they? So,
they're mechanical drives. Yeah.
Yeah.
On PS4, you get. Here we go. This is. Here we go. You get 50 to 100 megabytes per second.
And that's still.
It's respectable.
For a mechanical drive, that's fairly respectable.
It's respectable, but like.
But in comparison, though, oh my God. That's ridiculous. That's nothing.
Yeah, it's nothing.
Now, my God.
Another thing to keep in mind here is this is peak. The 17.38 number is peak compression.
Yeah, you're not going to see that all the time. Right?
Yeah, it is games using those technologies to the fullest. And they can do that because. They can be, you know, data apparently can be compressed and uncompressed very quickly. I believe that has something to do with the RAM being part of the IO thing.
Ah.
Because they're using 16 gigs of GDDR6 RAM. So it's like the fastest RAM that currently exists on the market today.
Oh, nice.
And I believe that's what's going to help compress and uncompress data as needed. So, yeah, you're talking some nonsense, right? Yeah. You're talking some crazy stuff right now.
I can't even.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, there's some talk too about PlayStation 5 games actually doing what PS4 kind of did for a little while, but kind of stopped doing within the last few years. I think the last game that I know for a fact did it was Injustice 2. The modular idea behind games is a pretty popular one, but it's being said, I guess, that PS5 may utilize that to a much greater degree than PS4 did, because it's
When you say modular, what do you?
I'll get to it. I'll get to it in just a second.
Okay.
So because data comes so easily for SSDs now and stuff like that, and because you don't have to worry about causing any conflicts. I don't really know all the math and technology behind it, but basically, here's the idea. On PS5, what they're saying is, yes, so early numbers have showed us that the PS5 games are still going to be pretty large in terms of download size.
Sure.
But what they're saying now is, yes, they might be large, but if developers take advantage of this modular idea, you can uninstall parts of them that you don't want to save space. So, like, some PS4 games allowed you to download one part first. Like, some of them gave you a choice of you want to download the multiplayer or single player first.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I remember. Yeah, yeah, I remember that.
And, like, Injustice 2, I remember, did a thing where, I think Mortal Kombat 11 might have done this, but I don't remember for sure, where once the game had downloaded, I think, 4 characters, you could play the game with those four characters only.
Yeah.
And then every time a new character was downloaded, it would be installed. It's like that, but it's also in reverse now, too. So not only can you download modularly, but you can uninstall modularly. So, like, if you download a full game, and then you're like, eh, I don't like the multiplayer. Okay, fine. Get rid of the multiplayer.
Like, I already played through the story. I don't need it right now.
Right, right. Yeah, if you're one of those people, if you're a COD fan, for instance...
Yeah.
Most Call of Duty fans will play through the campaign once.
Once, and that's it.
And then they'll play multiplayer forever and ever and ever. Yeah. So, theoretically, if they do this...
That's actually a really good idea.
Yeah, you'll be able to...
I like that.
Yeah, you'll be able to download the game, play the campaign, delete the campaign, and keep the multiplayer.
And that's actually a really cool idea.
Yeah, and thus save yourself room.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's a good idea with... That's a good idea, especially with games getting bigger and hard drive space becoming a little more scarce.
Yeah, and it's
I feel like that's a really good idea. Like
it is a good idea, yeah. And the thing is, the reason hard drive space is becoming more scarce is because now we're moving into SSDs, which are more expensive in every way.
Expensive.
Yeah. So yeah. And also I didn't put this in the news because I don't have the exact link or source for it. Or, like, I didn't read a full article, but I heard that the first third-party hard drive that Sony might support for the PS5 may be going on the market soon. I believe it's a Samsung hard drive.
Oh, yeah, I heard about that, too. I saw that, too.
Yeah, it's a Samsung solid-state hard drive that apparently does up to 7 gigs per second bandwidth, which, if it's true... and it, you know, I guess meets the connection criteria, whatever those are, Sony could support it. And they did say they would support other hard drives.
Yeah.
Which I think is a better move personally than Xbox and their freaking ridiculous nonsense.
Yeah.
So.
50 to 100 megs.
Yep.
And if, wow. Man.
50 to 100 megs.
I can't even.
Imagine The Last of Us 2 loading screens now. On PS5.
Because
Last of Us 2...
That's
going to
be the first game I love.
Loading screens.
The games I want to test are The Last of Us 2 and Soul Calibur 6.
Yeah, exactly.
Soul Calibur 6 has just... Oh, God, the loading times are horrible in that game.
And if you can get rid of those loading times, that'd be all you need in that game.
That'd make that game so much better. Because like the game was good, but the load times kind of kill it for me.
Yeah, they put you off. I get that. I totally get that.
Like a minute and a half, like not even joking.
Yeah, I totally get that. Long load times suck.
It's like PS1 days, but
not.
You kind of get used to it for like PS1 stuff because it's just like, yeah, you know, new technology, whatever. But now it's just like, man, optimize your crap.
Yeah, right.
Better guys. I don't know. Like, oof.
Speaking of loading times, though, we should also talk about this. I didn't put this in the outline, but I guess we should mention this.
Oh, right.
Xbox did a thing.
Yeah,
they
did.
They gave the media some prototype Xbox Series X units. And although these are probably very close to retail units, it should be clarified that the boxes themselves have the word prototype on them. I found this out from the GameSpot guy that got his. He said, just so you guys know, like this is probably very close to a retail unit, but it does say prototype. So there's at least a small chance that retail builds are going to be a little different. That said, the press got a bunch of prototype Xbox Series X units, and they got the opportunity to test backwards compatibility on those units through Game Pass. So basically... Microsoft made a few, not nearly all Game Pass games, but they made a few Game Pass games available on the Series X to try and test out backwards compatibility. The results of that were mostly good, but interestingly, may not be the results that a lot of people were expecting, at least not completely. So. Yeah. I think I understand why, but I will explain as best I can. So the results of that were essentially this. As far as graphics go, the first thing to note is that if a game was already hitting its targets, like if you had a game that was running well as it was and didn't have any frame drops or noticeable problems already, then you probably won't notice a difference on the Series X. However, games that had a mode wherein there were a lot of frame drops or a lot of screen tearing and stuff like that, those games are the ones you notice improvement in.
That makes sense, actually. Yeah. I can see that.
Right, because now the Series X is using a more powerful CPU and GPU, so they can basically, it fixes the bugs on its own by being more powerful.
Like auto-detect, almost like, oh, this is natively running kind of badly, let's divert some more.
Let's boost it. Power. Yeah, exactly. There's a mode in Final Fantasy 15. I guess that was the best example. Final Fantasy 15 has a mode called Light Mode, where you can unlock the frame cap, because normally I believe it's locked at 30, I believe, and it can go up to 60. You can unlock it, and it will give you the best graphical performance setting. So it's basically going for 4K 60 almost. I think it's 1440p actually, but close enough. On Xbox One, this causes problems. On Xbox One, it almost, from what I heard, it doesn't ever quite hit 60 ever, and just kind of floats around maybe 40 to 50,
which is almost inconsistent. Frame rate is worse than steady frame rate, I would say.
Right. Even if it's 30. A steady 30, it's yeah, exactly. On Xbox Series X, smooth, solid 60 the entire time.
Nice.
So, their backwards compatibility stuff, it works. Now, they have said that they're so confident in the Xbox Series X backwards compatibility that with select games, they're going to do other things too. They're going to work some behind-the-scenes magic on select games that will offer more options, like, number one, doubling frame rates. So if a game ran at 30, you can make it a 60 FPS game, for instance.
Okay, that's interesting.
And also, they're talking about this. This sounds crazy.
The speed of the game, though, you think? I don't know. It seems like it would kind of mess up some things.
I feel like there might be a way to do it. Like it might be like duplicating frames, kind of, instead of like just jumping through them. I don't know. I don't know. I feel like there's probably a way to do it. That makes sense. Because you're right. Because I wouldn't want to double the speed of the game necessarily.
Yeah.
But I think there's probably a way to get around it. But also on select games, they're talking about, and none of this is implemented yet, so the press didn't get to try this out yet. So none of this exists right now. But they're talking about 4x multipliers on resolution for some games.
Whoa.
4x multiplier.
That's insane.
Like, hey, if your game isn't 4K, yes it is.
We are making it 4K. Ah.
Take that! And of course, actual developers have the freedom on Xbox to go ahead and go into their games and make it acknowledge that there's a Series X running it, and then boost the game accordingly on the developer side too. So they have that freedom too.
Yeah,
and that's where the next thing comes in that might surprise people. So loading times on Series X backwards compatibility. How are they? Well, they're better. But you might be shocked because they're not like 0 seconds. There's a reason for that, though, I think, and I'll get into it. But first of all, I want to give probably the best example, at least the best example that I heard, again, was Final Fantasy 15. Apparently, to load a save game in Final Fantasy 15 on an Xbox One, takes about a minute to load into, to a save from the main menu.
Yeah.
On Series X, it takes 12 seconds.
Nice.
Big improvement. Absolutely a big improvement. Absolutely big improvement. And that big improvement in loading times did come to other games as well. Red Dead Redemption 2 took a shorter time to load. And by the way, the Final Fantasy 15 thing, it also loads other areas. Like as you move from area to area, it loads them in that quickly as well, about 12 seconds.
Nice. Oh, good.
So that's good, but you might be asking yourself, well, what the heck? These are SSDs, and even Xbox Series X can handle like 4 gigs per second. It's like 4.2 gigs per second, something like that.
Yeah.
So why the heck is it still taking 12 seconds, right? Well, here's the thing, guys. This is what you're seeing when the game itself is not designed for that right. kind of throughput.
Yeah, no, that actually makes sense.
Yeah, all the game is doing is it's doing the same processes that it all has always done, but just as fast as it can because SSD. It's not worrying about write speeds as much because it's an SSD. But it doesn't.
Yeah.
The game doesn't know all this power it has to take advantage of because it's not designed to take advantage of all that power.
It's not designed. Yeah, no, that makes sense.
So what you're going to see is actual Xbox Series X games are probably going to load faster than backwards-compatible Xbox One games.
Yeah.
If they actually ported, or if they did a next-gen upgrade to Final Fantasy XV, I bet it loads faster.
That makes me wonder if we're going to see that with PS4 games as well.
I would assume so, yeah.
That would actually make sense.
I would assume so. But the point, though, is you'll still see improved load times, probably drastically. But it may not be as improved as you might expect. 12
seconds is a hell of a lot better than a minute.
Sure, yeah. Sure, I'll take my 12 seconds. That's fine. Yeah. It just may not be as improved as you might expect because it's not, on games that aren't designed for it, it's just not, it's not going to push past what it knows can happen. That's why we just have to hope that a lot of developers choose to do next-gen upgrades. And a lot of them are going to do next-gen upgrades. So when they do those, load times will probably be drastically decreased again.
Yep.
So there you go. Also, it's worth mentioning that this same group got to test the Xbox Series X Quick Resume feature. And this one, I will admit, surprised me because I can't quite explain why it does what it does. I don't know. Let's talk about it. So Quick Resume is the feature that really kind of already existed, even on current Xbox Ones. They didn't call it Quick Resume. I mean, sure, the big thing is, on Xbox One, it's only one game. Same with PS4. You can pause a game and even turn your Xbox off or PS4 off, and you can come back to it, and it'll be right back where you left it, which is really cool. But the big selling point on Quick Resume on Series X is that it's multiple games at a time. You can do that, too. So you can swap between games. And I guess that's the point. You can swap between games that are all held within the same...
That's kind of impressive, actually.
Yeah, it is. I think PS4 is going to literally do the same thing, just not call it Quick Resume. But so you can swap between games that are open, and not only that, this part is impressive. The number of games you can swap between is 6.
Wow, that's a lot.
You can have 6 games open, jeez, and swap between them at will, keeping the save states of all of them.
Dang, that's a lot of data to keep track of.
It is. And the way that it handles it is when you exit a game, or like when you go into the home screen of the Xbox, it takes whatever's in the RAM and dumps it into a thing on the SSD. And then once you hit Quick Resume, it loads it back into,
RAM.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. And it will do that for 6 games. If you launch a 7th game, this is by the way, this part's a negative. If you launch a 7th game, it will close the first game you held in Quick Resume and then launch that 7th game.
Yeah.
Problem is, here's the negative though. That itself is not a problem. The problem is there's no notification of that, apparently.
Oh, it's not telling you what it's closing.
Yeah, there's no warning. It will close the first thing you did it with, but there's nothing that tells you that.
It should pop up a thing like, hey, just so you know, this is gonna close.
This is gonna close. Yeah. Exactly. That's all you need to do. But
I feel like that'll come in an update though. I feel
probably,
like people...
honestly, probably day one.
Yeah.
That's probably a really easy thing to do.
Yeah.
But here's the thing that I don't get. It's funny because a lot of the press that tried this out were happy with this, but to me it doesn't quite make sense. And hear me out here. Here we go. When you quick resume a game, the act of resuming the game, loading it up, you know, putting the whatever they put in SSD back into RAM, takes 5 to 8 seconds.
That now, seems like a long time.
It actually does seem like a long time. Now, people are liking it because it's better than having to load up the game from scratch. But to me, this still seems like a long time. I mean, again, this is not a case of like game loading. This is not a game loading screen. This is the Xbox Series X taking something that is in its super powerful RAM and putting it back into its super powerful SSD and putting it back into its super powerful RAM.
Yeah.
I don't understand why it takes that long.
Yeah, no, that seems... I'll be curious what the numbers are going to look like on PS5.
Yeah, I am too. Loading stuff. Like, I am too. Because it is still an assumption, but I assume that cool. PS5 will do the same thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know. It takes 5 to 8 seconds for every quick resume. With multiple, like they tried multiple games and it's always 5 to 8 seconds. So I don't know.
I don't know. It just seems like an abnormally long time for doing what it's doing. I don't know.
Yeah. Cause that's a Series X process. That's not a game process at all. But as far as the game knows, it's paused. That's all right. The game knows.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's a weird thing.
Yeah.
But still, it is still better than having to load fresh into a game. Right back where you were.
No matter how you slice it, though, this generational leap is going to be insane.
Oh yeah, absolutely, absolutely. There's no denying that. Absolutely, it is. All right, so that's stuff. I'm actually proud of myself for remembering to talk about that stuff because I didn't put it in the outlines. I felt bad about it. Anyway, yay! Next up, let's talk about Amazon, who had their own bit of gaming news this week.
Yeah. I don't know how I feel about this.
I don't know either. So Amazon has released into early access, to be clear, it is in early access right now, their own cloud gaming service. Now, their cloud gaming service has a very different idea behind it than any of the other ones.
Yeah.
Their service is called Luna. Amazon Luna is their cloud gaming service, and it is essentially a cable service for video games. That's kind of the idea behind it. So right now in early access, there's only one channel, and that is what they're calling it, by the way, a channel called Luna Plus, which is like $5.99 a month and gives you access to a certain number of games, right? But the thing is, here's how they get you, I guess. Everything will be in channels. So the one they talked about so far is apparently they've already partnered with Ubisoft, which is cool. You know, I like Ubisoft. Ubisoft will have a channel on Luna for which you pay a separate subscription fee, just like a cable service. So.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a different approach.
I don't see this taking off.
I don't know if it's going to work. I don't know if it's going to work because, you know, I don't know.
People are getting sick of all these separate fees, I feel like.
Yeah, I think.
I think you're starting to see a little bit of consumer revolt.
Yeah, like, for instance, even though it's in early access right now, I don't want to sign up for it because I have Stadia, and guess what? I still like Stadia.
Yeah.
I still like it.
Stadia's good.
Yep.
Speaking of, quick bit of stuff, news, I guess. Personal news. I bit the bullet and got myself a gaming laptop.
Oh, really?
Just today, so.
Dude!
It should be here next week.
Well, congrats, man.
So I will actually be able to play legit PC games. I'm so
right.
It's awesome, but I'll actually be able to, like, play Mortal Kombat on PC and
me, you, and Chaosbringer.
Yep.
There you go.
So
potentially Misty.
It's gonna have a. I'm looking forward to this particularly. It's gonna have a solid state drive.
Nice. Nice
computer with a solid state drive.
Nice.
And Liam is like, "Yeah, your mind is gonna get blown."
Yep. Yep.
Looking forward to it.
Yep. Mine has a solid state drive in it too, but I actually don't typically put games on it because it's so small. It's a 250 gig solid state drive, so I pretty much just use that for main storage.
Yeah.
But yeah, solid state drives are great. They're great. Your computer will boot up super fast and you'll love it.
Yay.
Indeed. But yeah, yes. So Luna. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, no, but yeah, no, Stadia is great
stuff. Yeah, Stadia is great. Stadia is, I don't care what anyone says. Dang it. I like Stadia.
Me too.
There's a bunch of games on Stadia that have been free through Stadia Pro that I haven't messed around with yet, and I should do that at some point, because
yeah, same here.
It's just fun. It's fun to mess around and stuff that's free.
Oh, I didn't get Power Rangers. I think I missed out on that.
No, I don't think you have. I think it's still up.
It's still there.
I think it's still up.
They keep the they tend to keep the programs around.
Look at how long Destiny's been up there. It's still there.
Yeah, it's still there.
Wow. Yeah.
I think that's been there ever since
launch. That's the first pro game.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy. I think Battle for the Grid is still there though, so you can still go get it.
Nice. Okay, good.
Yeah, man. So but
yeah, I don't know. This I don't like this model.
I don't know.
It doesn't sound appealing.
It didn't hit me the right way either. I'm just like, no, I don't. I'm not interested. I don't wanna.
Mm-mm.
I don't wanna.
This all art stuff, just nah. It doesn't. Because we're already asked to pay a lot for, you know, different subscriptions and stuff. Like,
yeah,
you've got Twitch subscriptions for, you know, streamers, for individual people. You've got like Netflix, you've got YouTube.
Game Pass.
I pay for Game Pass,
YouTube Premium,
your online services. I pay for YouTube Premium so I can play videos in the background, and I get the bonus of no ads, but
right, it's bonus.
Mostly for the background play. WWE Network. I mean, like, there's so many of these now.
Yeah, our lives are subscriptions.
you are no longer because the big argument for years was like, oh, I'm saving a crap load of money by getting rid of cable and just subscribing to like these two things, and now it's like you cut cable and then you subscribe to like 20 things and you end up paying the same amount anyway, so you really don't save anything anymore.
Right, it's true.
Because these companies caught on to,
in fact,
oh, you know, yeah.
As a matter of fact, total truth here, guys, YouTube TV just increased their prices.
Oh my god, it was expensive to begin with.
I think it's like $59.99 now a month. It was like $39.99 before.
I still think that's too much, but that's ridiculous.
Yep.
Good lord.
That said, if you're not going to use cable and you want channels, YouTube TV does support audio description tracks. So, you know, for what it's worth, you know, like there is positives there.
That's a bit of, oh yeah, that's a, we could probably cover that in,
accessibility. I should have written that one down too. I just thought of it too. You're right. We'll cover that too in accessibility news.
That'll probably go in the GA comp section anyway.
Well, yeah. It isn't
because it came out around that time anyway.
It came out during it. did. Anyway, we'll get to that. We're being all cryptic now. Like, what are you talking about? but yeah, so Luna is a thing. It's in early access, and we'll see how it goes. I don't know how much Amazon is really putting into this. So I guess we'll see what they're willing to do. Because the thing that already I can tell you this: the difference between Luna and Stadia is, at least right now, Stadia at least put a bunch of marketing behind their stuff. Like, whether you like Stadia or not, there was a bunch of trailers. There was a bunch of, like, you know, here's what Stadia is going to be like, you know, stuff like that. None of that with Luna. None of it.
Yeah.
So I don't know how serious Amazon is about this. I don't know if they're just putting their toes in the water and seeing if it's hot. I don't know. So we'll see.
I don't know. I think the reception is going to be very tepid.
Yeah, I'm think you might be right. But anyway, that's going to do it for gaming
news.
And so we will now move on to Accessibility. Welcome to Accessibility. And man, the ending of that last one. What happened to your voice there? The, like,
I was thinking I could go, and it didn't work so well.
You found a threshold there, and you couldn't go past it. Yeah, there you go. Anyway, because that's brilliant news this week. It begins with a negative. When I say a negative, I mean, holy cow, this is awful.
Yeah, this is worst mistake that could have been made was made.
Yep, I agree. That mistake, ladies and gentlemen, if you didn't know already, you're about to find out. Twitch has let go of Dale Cruz.
Yep.
Their accessibility lead, they just let him go.
Yep. Out of the blue, too. Just
out of the blue.
Oh, you're gone. What?
Suddenly he sends he sends out some tweets, says, hey, I no longer work at Twitch. Please refer all accessibility inquiries to Twitch. Twitch themselves. Yep. Twitch themselves.
Which means that there is no accessibility program right now.
He sent a couple of DMs out. I got one. Misty got one too, which is interesting.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And just basically said the same thing, but just like he told us before he told the public.
Yeah.
And I responded to him and I said, you know, I don't understand it. That's terrible.
Doesn't make any sense.
But I also tried to be encouraging and say, look, you're going to find your place, and I have enjoyed working with you a great deal and would do so again if you need me. So,
yeah.
So, yeah, there you go, though.
Twitch. I don't know, man. Twitch has been doing this woke shit for a while, and it's bad. It's a bad look.
I'm not
Dear Lady Mod, I don't know if you've been following that whole thing.
No, I haven't.
God, that's a whole friggin' rabbit hole if you want to dive into that later. Look up the Dear Lady on thing on Twitch and just their whole, I don't know, it's this whole thing. It's stupid.
Yeah. Well, this, I don't know. Like, I don't know how to feel now. Like, because here's the thing. In terms of Twitch and accessibility, I felt really good for a long while.
Yeah.
After the negative blog came out that I wrote about Twitch accessibility and how I was, you know, may have to make the jump to Mixer. This is back when Mixer was around.
That opened a lot of doors.
Yeah. They were receptive. They listened to what I had to say. They acted on what I had to say. And I felt good. And then this happens. Why?
And the sucky thing for me is, like, this is kind of making me reconsider things a little bit. Because this happens, like, 2 days. Literally
2 days after you get affiliate. Like, yeah. What? Yeah.
It's so frustrating.
Yep. Yeah. And it sucks. And I think this is one of those things where I think when I start my stream on Friday, I think I'm going to bring this up on stream and just be like, this sucks, but here we are.
Yeah.
Because there is no alternative. There's no better alternative. At least for me, there's not a better alternative.
Mixer kind of was, but that
Mixer could have been.
Yeah.
But now they're gone. And YouTube is definitely not a better alternative for me because I've already built up the community that I have.
And there's no good chat solution for you. Like, YouTube comment chat is just,
it's awful.
It's a cesspool.
I've heard it's notoriously difficult to moderate.
Yeah, you can't moderate that. Forget about it.
Yep, it's all bad.
I'm a mod in Liam's chat, and yeah, it's really, have fun moderating individual messages. It's not happening.
Right.
You can do it, but you have to, like, it's like five different keystrokes to do shit. And it's really
stupid. Dang, dude.
Very unintuitive, and it's not good.
It's not built for live gaming streams.
It's not built for live gaming streams. Chat doesn't read automatically. You have to scroll with the screen reader. You have to scroll manually. So that's, you know, constant up and down arrows to see if new messages come in. Like,
it's that's all bad. That's all bad.
All bad.
Dang. Yeah, so Twitch is still the option that I have right now, guys. Mm-hmm. So I will not be leaving Twitch, but this definitely is a blow
And I flat out said Monday when this happened, Drew corrected me and he said, when things break, access wise, they're not going to get fixed, and this is why. And I honestly, at this point, because I haven't been shown otherwise yet, if I'm shown otherwise, then cool. But I have no reason right now to suspect any differently that, you know, like Dale was the guy, you know.
Dale was the guy, yeah.
He made sure things got passed along to who needed to see them. That's why you have leads, so you can go to them and say, hey, this is broken. Can you fix this?
Yep. Dale did that and more. Like, Dale was the reason that any, not just me, that any disabled streamers were featured on Global Accessibility Awareness Day. He set that whole day up.
That was incredible.
Yeah. He set the entire day up.
I can have that next year. I almost guarantee you're not going to have that next year.
Nope. Probably not. Because that was a great freaking day for me, to tell you that. Oh,
God, you got like 1,000 followers that day.
Yeah, that was 700, but still. I mean, you can't argue with that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is all bad. Why Twitch? Why would you do this?
I guess he was, I don't know.
The implication was that he was speaking out too much, according to him himself.
That doesn't make any sense to me.
It doesn't make any sense because, I don't know. It's ridiculous.
I would get it if he was saying outlandish things, but he wasn't.
He was defending accessibility all the time.
That's like his passion. Like,
yeah,
that's what you do. Like,
it's what you do.
That's like, that would be like Naughty Dog. Like, if you worked for Naughty Dog, that would be like them firing you for like similar stuff. Like, what?
Bro, no,
it doesn't make any sense.
You're asking for another idea. That's it. That's the last one we can handle. You're fired.
Right.
You're fired. You're fired. Why does Vince McMahon own Naughty Dog now?
Right.
Oh, man.
Neil Druckmann goes, it was me, Brent. It was me.
Oh, my God. Neil Druckmann is Vince McMahon. Oh, my God. The revelation. Oh, boy.
Yeah.
This is wrong. This is wrong.
It's wrong. It's bad. It's I don't know what they're thinking. I think it just boils down to this woke crap.
Yeah, I don't know, but my respect for Twitch has certainly dwindled. That said, again, I'm still going to stream on Twitch because I can't deny that.
I will too, but man, that works for me. Like, this is just terrible.
Yeah. Let's move on to happier things.
Hey, happier things.
So, over the past 2 days, the Game Accessibility Conference has just taken place. The very first all-digital online GA Conf, which of course was necessary, yep. But you know, it's still cool.
Really well, actually.
It went really well. It went super well.
Great.
I have a number for you. A number that makes me very happy.
Ooh, okay.
1,100.
Whoa.
GA Conf 2020 had 1,100 plus registrants.
Dang.
Across the game industry. That's awesome. I think we did good.
Good.
There was a wide variety of topics covered. A lot of different types of accessibility addressed. Like, Bungie was there talking about Destiny 2 button remapping. And oh my God, like, When I listened to that speech, I was finally able to appreciate the work that they had done to with the button remapping. Do you realize the craziness that you can do with Destiny 2 button remapping? You can do, like, recorded macros. If there's a sequence of things that you want to be able to do with one button, you can set up that sequence and make it happen with a single button.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's real good for, like, motor impairment. Like, okay, I want to do this sequence because it's normally really hard for me because it's like across a whole bunch of different buttons.
Yeah, yeah.
And I can't do it fast enough, but yeah, that's...
I think there is a limit. Like, you can only do like two or three things or something like that. But
sure.
But still, it's... That's you don't see that in button remapping. It just... No. Usually it's just free mapping.
It's just for replace X with Y.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Also you can get rid of conflicts yourself by they just allow you to unbind things too. So if you want to get rid of a conflict before it happens, you can just unbind something and then put whatever you want on it and then bind the other thing to something else.
Good.
They support different types of like controllers with more than the usual amount of buttons. So like you can map a Zack, for instance, I believe.
Oh, good. Good, good, good.
So it's massive.
That's awesome.
Like it's Destiny 2 is impressive with what they did with buttons.
Cursor menus. So.
Yeah, I totally am down with what Ian said about it being the best button remapping he's ever seen. And at first I was like, but, you know, because I'm always like starkly defending The Last of Us Part 2. Like, but The Last of Us 2 though. He's like, no. Even The Last of Us 2. I'm like, oh.
Last of Us 2's button remapping is pretty good, but
it's pretty good.
It doesn't let you do macros.
It sure doesn't. Also, Destiny 2 lets you do chords, they call them, where if you can...
get Brown Speak vibes.
Yeah, right? If you can press two buttons at the same time, you can assign an action to two button presses, like A plus B will do this, or L plus R will do this.
Yeah.
If you want to do that, you can.
Nice.
So.
Good.
Pretty sweet.
Even more flexibility. Holy crap.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous, man.
I could even see Misty like using some of that.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe she hasn't yet, but I don't know. She typically plays with keyboard though, so I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's there, you know, and that's just great. But there was that. There was a discussion of accessibility of a game called Hyperdot, which was done by a single developer. That one's not blind accessible, but it's accessible in a lot of other ways, including you can play the entire game with eye tracking. Entire game. And the developer actually did a challenge to multiple gamers out there to play the entire game with eye tracking all the way through as part of the challenge. And the game has 100 levels. It's kind of like Pac-Man, where it's kind of a maze thing.
Okay.
It's not quite like Pac-Man in that you're not running away from ghosts. You have to dodge objects as they come across the screen. Through the level. But someone did it. I think only a couple people did it.
Wow.
But someone played all 100 levels of the game with only eye tracking.
Oh my god.
And I believe one of the slides is like they're kind of describing it.
Your eye strain after a while. Like
one of the slides about that challenge is like, here it is. Here's what they call it? Like the locked in focused stare of this player as he's trying to play the last level with eye tracking. Oh my
god. That's crazy. Wow.
Eye tracking, yo. Eye tracking is a cool technology. Like I know blind people can't use it, but man, it's cool.
Yeah.
I think
that goes to show how far technology has come that you can have that fine degree of control.
Yeah, because that's
through eye tracking.
It sounds like it'd be so difficult to me. Like,
it does sound like.
But apparently, it works. like, aren't they working on? Or I don't know if it already exists or not. But aren't they working on eye tracking for Minecraft? I think they are. Or maybe it's already out. I don't know.
That sounds familiar in some.
I feel like they are. If it's not already in, but that's awesome. Like, it's insane, but it's awesome because like. I just feel like there's so much room for error there, and yet somehow the technology works, so how can I knock it? Like, whatever.
Yeah, no, that's
people,
cool.
People played a whole game with it. Obviously, it works.
Yep.
So.
Cool.
Yeah, there was just that and so many other talks. There was a really great panel hosted by Sightless Combat about, gaming without sight, featuring four blind gamers of different types. And I really liked that one, too. Ross was on that panel as well. And Michael Fair, the Odyssey creator, was on that panel as well.
Yeah.
So yeah, old school.
Very old school.
But I mean, it was a great show, man. And of course, I have to mention The Last of Us 2 panel. The Last of Us 2 presentation.
That panel was awesome.
It was. And I was shocked.
I liked that they used some of your footage.
Oh, dude. They used way more than I expected them to use. I didn't know they were going to use that much. I mean, I knew they probably would use some, but I didn't know it was going to be that much.
Yeah,
It's funny because I got an email.
Like five or six different pieces of footage
used. Yeah, I got an email from my Naughty Dog contact before the show that day, before GACOM started for the second day. And he's like, hey, you should probably watch the Naughty Dog presentation. he said, you might be in one or two slides.
One or two.
Yeah, and he said slides, not even videos. He says, you might be in a couple slides, you know. But yeah, so they showed a lot of things, including they actually showed, I'm so happy they showed this, because this is a great moment. They showed my first ever stealth kill in any game, let alone Last of Us Part 2, but still, they showed that, and that was one of the defining moments. Misty told me later that moment meant something to her too, because that's the moment when she saw, because she was in the room. You could probably hear her in the background, actually, because she's in the background of all those videos. When she saw that stealth kill, she said that was the moment where she realized this was all going to work.
Yeah.
That this is going to happen, and we're going to do this thing.
Yep.
So, yeah, they showed that. And they showed a lot of other stuff. They even showed, like, there's a couple things they showed that were just us talking, like just discussing stuff. Like, I didn't think they'd show the brainstorming sessions, but they did. Cool. Yeah.
I liked that they brought up you and somebody else mentioned it too. More like, you know, basically saying more options are good. Don't worry about having long menus. We will sift through them because we want to.
Yep. That's true. That was feedback that all of us consultants gave.
Yeah.
And speaking of that, another thing that surprised me was how much they were willing to reveal during that presentation about the process. There are things that I guess I can talk about now because they were revealed publicly.
Yeah.
Like, I was shocked at some of the things they chose to reveal. For instance, I can finally tell my very humorous story about the TTS system in The Last of Us Part 2.
Oh, yeah. I'm curious about this.
Okay. So when I was first testing the game, actually, it was the second test that I did that I figured this out. We were going through the options, a very early version of the accessibility menu. We're going through those options and stuff like that. And I happened to ask about maybe speeding up the TTS. Like, can we maybe speed it up? That'd be cool if we could, right? Like, maybe we should think about adding that for a future update or something.
Yeah.
And they're like, no, we can't do that with our current engine. And I was going through the menu. I was like, okay. You know, I kind of brushed it off at the time. And then I just kept going through the menu. And all of a sudden, my brain clicked. And I jerked my head up and I was like, oh, I know why you can't speed it up. Because it's not actual TTS.
Yeah.
Because it's all pre-recorded files.
Right.
And according to Misty, the guy that's in the room with us, really, really great guy named Sam Schaffel. He's one of the QA guys. Apparently, he gave me a really weird look. Like, I feel like I wasn't supposed to figure that out. Like, I wasn't supposed to work out their systems.
That's funny.
But I did. So, yes, ladies and gentlemen, if you didn't know, it was revealed in the Last of Us GACOM presentation that, yes, indeed, the text speech in The Last of Us 2 is not actual. It is not a TTS engine.
Right.
It is, in fact, pre-recorded TTS files that are just piled together.
It actually makes sense, given how, like, everything is pronounced correctly and
they had to do a dictionary when they were recording things, because I guess Bo was originally pronounced Bow, which is a thing we've seen before.
Oh yeah, that's very common in screen readers.
Yep, so they had to do that. But yeah, they did it for all the localized languages, and apparently each language pack for TTS is 134 megabytes, which, by the way, is something I didn't know before. So that's, I didn't think there was anything I didn't know, but there you go. 134 megabytes per language pack for TTS.
By the way, I think I did. Yukio the developer of the BK.
Yeah, BK games. Yeah,
he's been playing through the game in Japanese.
Really?
It's actually really cool to hear the game in Japanese with the Japanese speech synth.
Oh yeah.
Not only that, but it's really cool to hear the dialogue in Japanese too, like the game style and stuff.
Japanese Ellie.
It's cool. On the move.
Yeah, man. I don't think you did send me that because I don't remember listening to it. I don't think you did.
I meant to. Maybe I didn't, but
that's freaking cool, dude. That's
yeah,
freaking cool. Yeah, it's funny because I think Japanese is one of the languages that is supported by the game that we can't actually access on the U.S. version, if I recall correctly.
I think all the languages are regional. I don't think you can get them any other way other than being.
You can get some. Like we can get, because we tested this on Rattlehead's channel. We had him switch to Spanish for his,
which makes sense because he is Mexican.
Yeah, because I was actually, apparently he didn't even know you could until I told him. I was like, oh yeah, everything is localized. You can switch the language to Spanish and TTS and the dialogue will be in Spanish. He's like, oh my God, really? And he's like, at first he was like, I might try it later. It's like, no, you should try it now. And the whole chat backed me up and like everyone in his chat was like, you should try it. So we did. And then he played the rest of the stream. He played that way. So yeah, we were able to switch to that. We could have apparently switched to French as well. So we do have access to some languages.
Okay.
Even even a few languages aren't typically spoken in the U.S. like French. But I believe Japanese for some reason is not available to the U.S. version of the game.
It might be because of character sets.
Maybe. Yeah.
I don't know if it affects things, because does it affect text as well?
Yeah, you can. That's true.
If it does, that's probably why. Maybe
that's true. That's yeah, because the system doesn't support the Japanese language in the U.S. probably and surrounding countries. Yeah, it could be that. Yeah, because text language is a factor as well. So
yeah,
interesting. It's just cool to consider that stuff. But anyway, the total number of languages, I guess, that TTS and dialogue are localized here. 24.
Oh my God.
24. And people, you should.
Said like Thai was like the only thing they couldn't get localized correctly.
Yeah. Yeah. You should have seen the chat room for this talk when they were talking about all this stuff. And I am talking about the localization bit, but mostly just really all of it. Like, developers from other companies were like, oh my God. Like, they're like, this is a light bulb massive moment. Effort.
Yeah.
Like, this is amazing. And then another thing that made people go nuts is when they revealed that all of the markup that's done for the waypoints for assisted navigation, both, like, collectible waypoints and for, like, story waypoints to navigate to your objective, all of it is done manually. It's not, like, an automated process. Wow. And that made people go absolutely insane. Like, they did this manually? They had a person do this manually?
Yeah. So much effort.
Matt himself, one of the presenters, was actually one of the guys that did most of that.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I'll tell you one thing. He was the guy that had to fix all the ledge guard thing.
Oh, no.
Believe me when I tell you.
Oh no.
Even though it occasionally happens now, believe me when I say back in testing, even though I wasn't supposed to be able to fall to my death, I fell to my death quite a bit. And he was like, oh dang it.
Oh man.
Great test stuff, man.
Programmer's worst nightmare.
Yep, that's right. When the thing that's supposed to work doesn't, then you have to figure out why.
Yep.
But it's just so good, man. It's such a good presentation. I
feel like that's going to like be a light bulb moment for a lot of developers seeing that and just like, oh, okay. You
know? Yeah, I think it is. I mean, this was an hour of discussion of all the things that we did for the last two. Like, there's so much.
And that was a really good, had a good flow to it, too.
Yeah, those two are great presenters. But you can't, like, as a developer, it's hard to look at that presentation and be like, oh, like, I even saw some people, I even saw some people afterwards, like, well, I need to do better. I saw that in chat after the thing was over. It's like, well, I need to do better. Yep. It's just like, it's just like I've said, like, this proves that it can be done.
And it sets the bar too.
It sets the bar. Yeah. It needs to be considered early on for it to really work this well, but it can be done.
Yeah.
I
feel like we have two like gold standards at the moment for accessibility from the outset and accidental accessibility. And from the start, you know, with built with accessibility in mind, obviously Last of Us 2.
Yep.
And then for accidental accessibility, now it's 13
sentences. 13 sentences, yeah. But I do think the best example of accessibility patched in is Sequence Storm, without question. Without question.
Yeah.
Ian.
He was there too.
Yeah, he was there too. Yeah, that's worth mentioning too. He was there too, and he actually did a really great talk as well. Also, as soon as his talk started, as soon as Daniel from Sequence Storm's talk started, the comments coming out of chat were, "Well, he wins the Best Dressed award." Apparently, he did his talk in a suit, like a legit suit.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm talking. That's taking your presentation seriously.
Yeah. But a lot of people liked the way he thought about accessibility, like his comparisons to like real life and like the real world versus accessibility in games.
Yeah.
You know, it's like having a guide dog to guide you across the street is kind of the way he put it, you know, like.
Yeah.
So a lot of people liked that that comparison to reality, you know.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, people liked his approach. Everyone was impressed with his narration, how he implemented narration the way he did. And they're like, wait, you're just using the Windows API? What? Really? What?
Like, yeah, it's really that simple.
It's not that hard, guys. Believe it or not. It's actually not.
Liam's trying to get the Temtem people to implement NVDA or the Windows API speed into that game, finally. So I hope that happens. That would be cool.
Yeah, it would be really cool. I hope they actually listen, because it seems like they were kind of hot and cold on the whole idea.
Yeah.
But hopefully they do. Hopefully they do. What was I going to say? So Ian said in the Sequence Storm chat, and I actually agreed with him on this when he said it. He said he puts Sequence Storm's accessibility for different reasons, but still he puts it up there with Last of Us 2.
Yeah.
Because a lot of effort was put into it, and a lot of features were added as a result of that. And the features that are there work so well that he actually puts Sequence Storm up there with Last of Us 2 in terms of accessibility. I'm like, yeah, actually it is.
Yeah.
That is something. That is something to be proud of, dude. If you're a developer that is developing on your own, which Daniel is, no one is helping him. And yet he makes a game that wasn't accessible at all, accessible to the level of The Last of Us 2.
Completely fully. Like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Not just blind accessible too, but like he had
there's stuff for cognitive load, there's stuff for motor impairment,
yeah
there's high contrast mode for visual impairment. I mean, yeah. he's got it,
kind of jumped head first.
Yeah, he just is like, I'm gonna do this. And then he did.
Was it you that I don't remember who was the first person that, like,
apparently I'm one of the reasons I was mentioned in his talk. So
nice.
Apparently I'm one of the reasons, because nice. I did tweet at him. Like, I didn't really think anything was going to come of it at the time, because I didn't know him. Yeah. But I did tweet at him when I found out about Sequence Storm. I found out about Sequence Storm kind of in a general way, like, oh, a rhythm game on Steam, the rhythm games are cool, let me see if it's accessible. And it's not. Oh, that sucks. But I remember sending a tweet that's like, man, I really like rhythm games. It's too bad this isn't accessible, because I really like the idea of a rhythm game with a story, like, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, I didn't know that was going to happen.
But apparently he just that just got him thinking about not only just blind accessibility, but
everyone. Yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah. He's done a lot for a lot of different disabilities in Sequence Storm. It's just great. It's great stuff, man.
And honestly, like, I wonder, he could probably see the metrics, but I wonder, like, how many extra copies that sold him. Probably a lot.
Dude, no joke. His talk sold a bunch of copies.
Wow.
No joke.
His talk alone sold. Wow, good.
No joke. Good. People, a bunch of people in the chat were like, well, I'm buying this. And one person posted the image of their receipt on Steam to show that they had purchased the game.
Good.
It sold a bunch of copies, dude.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Good. I'm glad to see that.
Yeah, it's good. It's a fine thing, especially because, again, you know what? That's another example. Just I've used this argument on The Last of Us 2 as well.
Yeah, accessibility sells.
Well, not only that, but the thing I was thinking of at the time was, or at least that I'm thinking of now, is that this is another example of a game that is approachable for everyone that is also a great demonstration of accessibility. So developers, you know, as they did after his talk, literal game developers purchased his game, and now they can look at his game and see what he did for accessibility.
Yeah, it's true.
Just like with The Last of Us 2. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I think this is going to keep some, this is going to turn some heads. Him and The Last of Us 2 are turning some heads right now, I think.
Good.
In a very positive way. Oh, and when the narration part of his talk started, I actually said in chat, I was like, okay, take notes, developers. This is how you do narration.
Yep.
And then everyone was blown away because narration.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. GA Conf was great. I left as GA Conf ended. I genuinely feel pumped about accessibility all over again, as I should, but I genuinely feel great about it all over again. People were genuinely interested. They were listening. They were there. I mean, 1,100 people across the game industry were there. So this is good. This is good for everyone.
So GeoConf in general means a lot to you anyway, because
it does.
What opened the door for you with this career path that you're on.
Yeah, it does. It does mean a lot to me. That's very true.
And it single-handedly got you involved with Naughty Dog.
Yep, it sure did.
It's because of GeoConf that The Last of Us 2 has blind accessibility in the first place.
Yep. It all goes back to Ian and Tara, doesn't it? Everything goes back to Ian and Tara. Oh, man. But those two deserve it, though. Like, oh, my God. I told Tara after it was over. She's like, I am ready for a beer. And like, go get you that beer. Go get you that beer.
Oh, yeah,
you deserve it.
You earned it.
Man, it was a great show. Great 2 days. I know it sucked that I had to take streaming off for it, but it was totally worth it.
It's totally worth it.
I got
the network opportunities are just too good to pass up.
I got to talk to a lot of people. I've gotten a lot more Twitter followers in the game dev scene. I got a couple of Discord friend requests, which I never expect, but I always accept them when I get them. Like, oh, okay, Discord. All right. Sure.
Yeah.
That is that. That's kind of the general GA Conf discussion, but now let's talk about something that happened during GA Conf. Breaking news in the middle of GA Conf.
This is cool.
This is pretty freaking cool. YouTube, it's funny because we're actually kind of just down talking YouTube about their moderation of chat and things like that. But sometimes YouTube does a good thing, like this.
Their community caption stuff too. That's kind of bullcrap.
That's
messed up. I think we talked about that before on a previous episode.
That they're getting rid of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think we did. But YouTube did a good thing.
It did.
YouTube has now enabled the ability to provide multiple audio tracks for a single video. And, ladies and gentlemen, the first video worldwide, I don't know how they got confirmation of this, but I believe it because I choose to. The first video worldwide to use this new feature that YouTube has enabled now was the new story trailer for Assassin's Creed Valhalla from Ubisoft, which has now an audio description track in the same video. So now, you don't have to click on a separate video to get audio description. It is the same video that everyone else is watching.
I like that it's just embedded in the normal video now, which is how it should be.
Yep. Same video everyone else is watching. You can flip on audio description. And by the way, for what it's worth, and I believe this is worth mentioning, it does not break accessibility when you do this. Switching audio tracks is super easy. There's a couple of buttons in the player. One of them is for subtitles and captions, and there's another more actions button, I think it's called. If you click on that, it brings up a little submenu. You can go down through that, and you'll get to audio track. And it'll say, by default, it'll say, you know, English. And then you press enter on that, it opens up a submenu. Just go down and switch to audio description. Actually, you go up. Actually, I had to go up to switch to audio description. And then press enter again, and it's done. Simple as that.
Now, the next thing that would be really cool is if they went the Netflix route.
Yeah, so it remembers like, your... Yeah.
Has audio description, it'll just use it by default.
Yeah, that'd be really cool. That'd be cool. I really hope that what this feature ultimately results in is a lot of companies of all types, not even just gaming, just in general, yeah. Utilizing it for audio description. That'd be fantastic. That'd be awesome. I would watch more ads if they had audio description.
Right?
Yeah, man. I mean, I already appreciate like Apple TV Plus does all their trailers in audio description as well as their shows. Like I appreciate that. And I believe Disney Plus does to a certain extent as well.
Half the time I see an ad for something, I'll be thinking like, oh, that was really cool. I wish I knew what it was for because it didn't announce.
Right. Right. Exactly.
Like that sounded really, I don't know what it was.
Or even worse, those ads are just music and they just have no effect on us at all because it's just music.
Yep.
And visuals.
Yeah.
Like, hey, yeah. if you're trying to sell me something, I don't know what it was. I have no idea what you're trying to sell me right now.
At least it's not as bad as the old days, the old TV ads, where instead of just giving you the number verbally,
call the number on your screen.
Well,
I guess we won't be buying that.
Right.
Oh, man. Call Life the number on your screen.
For this disease that you have.
Yep.
Call the number on your screen.
You know, it'd be funny if there's like an old ad where like it was a thing for like, if you're losing your vision at a rapid rate, please call the number on your screen.
Oh, that's just mean. Oh, God.
That'd be terrible. No. That's awful. Man. I gotta get away from that. That's terrible. But no, this is a great feature. I know Ubisoft is going to use this going forward. Absolutely, they are.
Yep.
But I hope that other companies jump on board. I hope other game developers. And by the way, it should be noted that this did generate interest in the GAConf chat. So like, other game developers saw this announcement. This really did go out in the middle of GAConf. Also, it was mentioned live by Tara on the thing between talks. So nice. Game developers cannot not be aware of this now because a bunch of them just saw it.
Yep.
So hopefully other game developers take note and utilize this as well, because that'd be awesome.
Ubisoft are really the pioneers of it. And
yeah.
No. Yeah, it's good.
Yep, the only other example is, I think, Everwild's trailer.
Yeah, Everwild.
That's the only other one that I know of, anyway.
Yep.
And then isn't Ubisoft.
And then the Xbox event last month or month before.
Yeah, yeah. Eckenbachen event.
Yep.
Really good. That event was really good with audio description. But that's the thing. It was also pre-recorded, so there's that. But yeah, that's basically it, I think, as far as I know.
Yeah, I think so.
I think we covered a wide gamut of stuff. Hopefully, rumors are flying, of course, because they always are. But there are rumors that we're going to get the real PS5 blowout of news next week. Something about October 4th, maybe, possibly. I don't know. But
all right.
That's what's floating around, so we'll see what happens. On
Thursday.
Right. At least it won't be a Thursday. You're right. Oh, my God.
Because it always happens.
All right. Well, let's do a little outro thingy. We'll get out here. This has been episode 60 of the Breakdown Worlds podcast. Again, 60. That's a number we can say now. It's pretty cool. I'm happy about it. I'm really happy about it. we've made it this far. We're not going to stop anytime soon.
Yep.
Folks, we enjoy doing this podcast every single week. As always, we'd like to have your feedback and your comments and your discussions and everything like that on what you think of the podcast, or just in general what you'd like us to talk about. If there's something specific you want us to mention that we didn't, then hey, let us know, and we'll probably talk about it next time. Because we love doing the show. It's something we look forward to every single week, believe it or not. It's fun. It's lots of fun. And we hope that you guys have fun listening to it as well. Me personally, I am looking forward to Friday. Now the GA Club is over, I just want it to be Friday so I can play more 13 Sentinels each turn. I want more 13 Sentinels. I think honestly, like, at least for now, again, I want to stress this. I do like Root Letter, but at least for now, I think I want to play 13 Sentinels both Friday and Saturday.
I don't think anyone would object.
I don't think they would. I don't think they would either. So yeah, we'll get back to Root Letter, but I think I'm just, man, I can't deny that game. I can't deny it.
I mean, I deny you.
Look what I did on last Saturday when I was like, I'm going to do a double stream where I'm going to play 2 hours of 13 Sentinels and 2 hours of Root Letter. Oh, wait.
Yeah.
I was like, guys, would you care if... Nope.
Nope. No one cared. That's fine. 13 Sentinels is so good. It's even just fun to watch. Like
the weird thing is that it managed to get better. Like, I was already sold.
Oh, I know, doesn't it?
Before I played on Saturday, I was already sold. The prologue's already sold me. It was already a great game with just those. And then it gets better.
Yeah, once the game opens up.
It just gets better.
Yeah. It's so good.
It's so good. I can't wait to play more of it. Can't wait.
I'm also glad that like the reviews even here are generally positive.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, this is the outro, so let's
It's so hard not to talk about 13 Sentinels though, because it's so good.
It's really good. Anyway, as always, guys, we really appreciate that you're listening to the show. We know that you're out there. We know that you're listening. I have the numbers to prove it, so thank you for that. I definitely do appreciate that. And as always, check out breakdownwalls.net. Breakdownwalls.net is where you can find this podcast as well as other things, including guides written by our very own Phage and other cool stuff related to Breakdown Walls members, like the fact that Sherlock just hit affiliate on Twitch.
Yay.
Very recently. Yes, congratulations to Sherlock. There you go.
Thank you.
Indeed. And I'm the first sub.
You are my first sub. Yay.
All right. So that's going to do it for this week. We'll see you next week for episode 61, where we may very well have, if the rumors are true, a bunch of PS5 news. Cool. I'm down with that. All right. We'll see you then, guys.